Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
We're talking again
about body swapping.
Hi, I'm Paul Mitzi.
I'm Brendan Levi.
And we are the Swapcast podcast. Every episode, we watch an entry in the body swap movie genre and break it down for you. This week, we are discussing the 2016 comedy Mama Boy. And I hear you saying, well, haven't you already done that? Well, yes, we have. but some of our friends, Brod and Damas from the Hunting Season podcast, decided to inflict the film on themselves after they heard our episode for some reason, and they have some thoughts. So we thought we'd bring them in and have a special follow-up discussion and hear what they have to say about that. Also, Brendan accidentally deleted the recording we did for this episode.
Throwing him under the bus.
I didn't realize we were telling people.
So this is the episode you get. But we're very excited to have Brod and Damask back to the show. So, yeah, welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, great, I think. As you're introducing us, you sort of said friends with a question mark at the end.
Yeah,
like
Bruce.
You weren't quite sure.
To well, be fair, we well, haven't been very kind to you.
Is that because, like, we're like, why are you coming on to defend Mama Boy?
I think it's more because I've inflicted so many bad things on you guys that I am really dubious that you regard me as your friend.
You're checking with us, friends, right, guys?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So before we get into the meat and bones of Mama Boy, what's been happening on the Hunting Seasons podcast?
Most recently, we released an off-topic, hot-topic episode, which is a bit like your tenuous recommendations episodes, where we talk about TV news and what we've been watching and actually what we've been playing this week, a video game talk. That was good. And the week before that, we reviewed Squid Game Season 1, and next week we'll be reviewing Season 1 of Why the Last Man, the show I've been waiting to come out for 20 years and it's been cancelled after one season.
I've started watching Squid Game, but I haven't gotten through it all, so I haven't listened to the episode yet. I'm watching it with a friend, so it's going to take weeks and weeks and weeks to watch it, but I'm enjoying it so far. Why the Last Man, I watched the first two episodes and kind of stopped, and I know Brendan was the same.
I did the same thing for a long time as well, yeah.
I did too, and I've got 5 days to watch the remaining eight.
Well, I weirdly, very strangely for me, before our off-topic, hot-topic episode, I didn't realize that that was what we were doing. I thought we were doing Why the Last Man. So I stayed up all night watching this show that I was like, fuck, I don't want to watch this. I watched about
there's some solid episodes. They're like 50 minutes.
And then I watched like six episodes and Brod told me that we were doing off-topic, hot-topic. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to finish watching this show. It somehow got its hooks in me. And I was someone who thought it was a piece of shit right at the beginning. It's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but there's a lot of story there. And by the end of it, I was like, man, a season two would be really nice. But who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
Maybe I have to dive back in.
I mean, it's been cancelled. You don't have to.
So, and how about Squid Game? Would you recommend people give that show a watch and then listen to your episode? I feel like everyone has.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone already has watched it. We were the last people to watch it. So
I was astounded my parents watched Squid Game. They read a subtitled TV series.
Yeah, but nobody's watching it. Nobody's watching it with subtitles. Like, what? I am, but nobody else is.
What? Yes, they are. What are you talking about?
No, there's a lot of people doing this dumb dub.
Everyone that I've spoken to is watching the dub.
Yeah. What?
And the dubs are out, as we've regularly said on this program. We're pro dub.
No, you're pro dub.
I'm pro good dub. I'm pro dub of Evangelion and of Cowboy Bebop, and that's about it.
I just can't do dub live action. Like, yeah, that feels really weird. Yeah.
When there's been a performance there, it's not just the vocals, it's a physical performance, and like the lip syncing and stuff. Like, that's the thing that anime can get away with it a little bit, and video games and stuff, because the animation happened later. I had this exact thought a few days ago. Yeah. It's much easier with animation. When it's live action, gotta read the subtitles, guys. Do the work.
Unless it's like a 70s or 80s like kung fu film.
Unless you can't.
Then you can do a dub.
Yes.
Then it's fabulous. Yeah.
On to Mama Boy. You obviously listened to our episode. For people that didn't, which you should probably go listen to it before you listen to this one. But Mama Boy is a film from 2016, and it's about a boy who's in high school, and he knocks up his girlfriend, who happens to be the preacher's daughter, and she is deathly afraid of revealing that she's pregnant to everyone because her dad will, I don't know, beat her up.
I believe at the beginning she states that she is afraid of everything. Yes. So, yeah, that leads into that.
So it happens that the main character's uncle is a crazy scientist who has invented a machine that can swap fetuses from one person to another.
I love you trying to make this sound like this is a reasonable plot line. Like, as you say it, like you're trying to give it some like legitimacy because this is the plot. Like, it's not insanity. Go on.
So he convinces her to do it. When she gets there, though, she kind of passes out, and they do it anyway. And from that point on, he carries her baby to term. Mm-hmm. I guess hilarity ensues.
Boy, does it. Yeah.
But, I mean, my kind of thoughts on this film is like, films this insane don't come along very often. And I feel like there's not many films that make as many mistakes as this film does on every level, script, acting, editing,
sound, everything.
So what about our discussion of it made you guys want to actually dive into this film, and what was that experience?
Didn't think the fart jokes were funny? I didn't either. Paul was the one who was laughing the whole time.
I hear Paul loves fart jokes, actually. That's just where I'm straight.
I think you're getting confused with another of my
definitely co-host. Heard Paul Mincy loves fart jokes. The reason I wanted to watch it is you obviously went out of your way to try and fit this into the formula for your podcast because you thought it was worth discussing.
Yes, he did.
Thank really, you. Really stretched the formula for this one. And I, like you, do love really bad movies. But movies are so bad, they're good. The Room is obviously the obvious example there. And when you touted this as being like the missing, like this hidden gem of a Room level sort of bad, so bad it's good film, I had to give this a go. However, listening to the podcast didn't help me because Brendan and Lucy really did a good job of convincing me this is actually terrible, like terrible, terrible, and not worth the time of going to watch it. So Damask and I sort of decided we'd do it, but we would be under the influence a little bit to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. We're like nice little like evening catch up via Zoom.
Yeah. Because because obviously now we're living on opposite sides of the country. So from time to time, we'll watch a movie together, usually like, a Marvel film or a big Disney property or whatever. It was the first time we decided to watch a bad movie together in this way. Because we would often watch bad movies together all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, I had a fucking great time. Like, and yes, we were not sober, and that really helped. It would like, I would, there were moments where I couldn't breathe. I was laughing so hard. Actually hadn't listened to your podcast because I remember, because we've got a movie club with Paul.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you were doing this for the podcast. So I didn't want to listen to the podcast before I had watched it. So I was coming, I had no idea what I was headed for. And I'm kind of glad that I wasn't, I could be surprised by it. And boy, was it surprising.
So I can't believe, I thought you guys were going to come on here and be like, Paul, you piece of shit.
I mean, I'll always come on here and say that, Paul, no matter what.
I thought you guys were going to defend Lisa, and I was like, what?
Oh, no, no, I will defend Lisa.
Yeah,
we'll
get
to
definitely going
to
defend Lisa. Yeah. Oh, my fucking God. Tootly. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
easy.
Yeah. Oh, so, that's like so you, first notes are about Lisa.
Yes. Yeah.
So, but before we get to the like meat and potatoes, so you do, would you put this on the level of something like The Room and Birdemic? Do you feel like this is a film that needs to be discovered and like group watched and, you know, parodied to that point?
I would put this in because there's different levels and categories of bad films. I think films like Birdemic and The Room are from the minds of madmen. This seems like people who, I mean, they're obviously insane because how could you not be? But this seems like more of like a collaborative effort and everyone on every level was bad at their job.
Yeah.
So it's a, I would put this in kind of more of a, I've recently watched He's All That, which I was, I thought it was just going to be like, okay, this is going to be bad. But that was so bad. I was like, oh, this is a generally enjoyable bad movie to watch. I would put it more with He's All That than I would The Room, I think.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think this is not quite reaching the levels of The Room or Birdemic, which was going to be my tenuous recommendation, actually, because I fucking love Birdemic. But the, but this is, yeah, this is different in that it is just, It's people who are just terrible at what they're doing. It's exactly what it is, as opposed to, like there's something actually wrong with them, and they're interesting from a like a psychological level. It's just like, oh, everyone sucks at this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So okay, let's get straight into it, Lisa.
Yeah.
How can you justify?
He stole her baby, Paul. He stole her fucking baby.
Yeah, it's that pretty straightforward.
At no point does she consent to that surgery.
Exactly.
To that decision. She's blacked out. They take the baby.
After
I'm sorry,
that,
she's
no, no, no. She's just said, what do you mean after that?
You're right. Get over it, Lisa. Get over it. It's ridiculous.
No,
all
no,
right?
No, no. My thing is, okay.
You hate
stole
women.
The
I get it, Paul.
They stole the fetus out of her body.
Yes.
Disgusting. Horrible thing.
Yeah, that's but like Handmaid's Tale level shit.
Yeah,
like, it's
I was like,
insane.
This is a horror
wait a
film,
second.
Paul.
Is this an ambush? Have you covered our own podcast to cancel us?
But not once did she mention that afterwards. She
well,
did
we
not
don't
say
get her perspective,
once.
Paul. Exactly. At no point do we ever get to sit down with this woman who has gone through probably the most traumatic thing a woman, a pregnant woman, can possibly go through. We don't see her at all. We see this guy, I don't know, looking sad and eating pudding for like 2 hours. We get nothing from her. It's ridiculous. Nah, justice for Lisa. That's my take.
She is history's greatest monster. Like, he did her a favor. She did not want to be pregnant, but she obviously didn't want to abort the baby.
So she was asking for it. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, no. Yeah. There's literally no other way this could have been achieved, and he managed to achieve it. Like,
she didn't want it to be achieved at all.
But she went there. Like, she went there.
She went, yeah. Okay, sorry. Sorry, okay. Just remember that, everybody. If you go home with somebody and then decide that you don't want
to
do
room.
Something,
yeah, exactly.
You've already consented and no longer can be held accountable for their actions. Fine. Good to know, Paul.
All right. For the rest of the episode, we won't be hearing from Paul and Brendan.
What I think Paul is trying to say.
Oh, here we go. Devil's advocate over here. Where's Dora? Yeah, go for it.
I don't know how I can get out of this point. Some real solid points.
Basically, what we're saying is we should listen to Bill Cosby.
Oh God, I'm gonna leave.
After we watched the film, I immediately texted Paul and was like, "Paul, you never mentioned that she did it without consent." And Paul was like, "Yes, we did." I was like, "You okay? If you
it
did,
was,
it was a big
it
enough
was
headline."
Mentioned.
I re-listened to the podcast. It got brought up and instantly was papered over. Like,
yeah,
it
who
was...
brought it up? Who brought it up, bro?
Oh, we got an ally over here.
That's true.
And they said, stop talking about it, Brendan.
That is not what happened. That's lies and slanders.
It should have been the headline. This was instantly turned to a horror film for me. I was like, I cannot believe what I just witnessed in this movie, and no one seems to care about it.
Yeah.
It was so strange.
Yeah.
It was really off-putting.
Yeah, but she was really annoying after that.
Yeah. Oh, she, let's be honest, fellas. She was a fucking bitch, am I right?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You mentioned before we do a movie club, and one of the movies we recently all watched together was Back to the Future, which we all agreed pretty much was one of the best movies of all time.
Correct.
And it's a perfect movie. And I know Brendan thinks that as well. So what did you guys think of all the Back to the Future references and the uncle being a play on Doc?
What a beautiful homage to that film. No, look, obviously it's absolutely absurd, but the one thing I really enjoyed about that character was that he felt the need to have a parasol when he was standing in sunlight and yet drives a convertible. That was like a little bit of costuming that I was like, well, no one is looking in at the frame at all at this. Like, there's no thought going into anything. It's one of those things like, oh, we need a mad scientist. Let's just smash in these like weird pop culture references, but we won't actually reference it because we don't want to be sued. Stuff. It was nonsense.
Can't afford to get
it
sued.
It was absolute nonsense.
I have a slightly hazy memory of the film, if I'm being honest. But from what from my recollection, once the transition of the fetus is achieved, he basically disappears from the film, right? Like, there's no follow-up. There's no he's interested in how this experiment goes. It's like we see a montage of Kelly reading a book on pregnancy, probably while in the laboratory because the monkey's there, I think. And, like, that's as close as we get to seeing the doc guy again. He just disappears completely from the film until the very, very end. I think he shows up a little bit towards the end. It's...
Well, they only had 2 hours to tell this story. They had to fit a lot of other stuff in.
We had to spend time with all the other characters, like that fucking nurse.
Oh, the nurse. Oh, my God.
It was so upsetting. Like... They were the scenes that I wasn't laughing. I was just like, my hand was in my head and I was just saying, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I was so horrified by what I was seeing. This weird pedophile woman who is also hitting on the principal. It was just bizarre.
And one of, like, it's a performance for the ages. I don't think I can't think of many other performances literally gave me like a visceral reaction where I wanted to run away. Like the way that she was delivering the lines so slowly, you just wanted to like put your hands in the screen and shake her and say like, just speed up.
Yeah.
Her character and the principal both had this thing where they were told they were fucking hilarious. They were convinced they were the best part of this movie and leaned into every single facial expression, line delivery, and then for some reason they decide not to edit any of it out either. It's
well, I think
like
we can all agree all that what they were doing was hilarious. I don't think any of the jokes is. But so you guys were talking about, like, I can't remember his name, like Tobolowsky. Why he would be on this. I had a theory that the principal was like an old improv friend from back in the day of Tobolowsky, and that's why he's in this film. That's the only way I could somehow justify it. He got a friend to pull a favor.
Yeah.
Like, he should be embarrassed. He should have like formally issued an apology.
I'm waiting for it. Yeah,
but it's funny. Like, okay, it's a very low budget, under the radar kind of movie, but there's no like director's interview. There's nothing for this film. There's a couple of like red carpet interviews on YouTube. Apart from that, there's very little background on how this got made, why this got made, who's funding it, who, like, because it's very clear that there's some sort of religious funding.
I do think it's like
here.
A faceless Christian mob of like cool Christians, like a bunch of youth pastors got together and wrote the script and like, fuck, we're funny.
My first impression was this isn't a religious film. It's like the first aggressively agnostic film. Because it was so, like, against sort of, like, organized religion, right? It's, like, this idea that God will forgive you, but very vague. Not a specific God. Not the God from
the
priest.
We don't like rules, man.
Exactly. It was, like, very agnostic. But then it became a little bit more, towards the end, became a bit more religious again. And then it's, like, it's either that hip Hillsong-y type, like a cheap Hillsong-esque church that produced this, or it was made by someone who was ostracized for having a teen pregnancy by their church. And so
like
they're
an
still religious.
Type vibe.
Yeah, they're religious still, but they were ostracized from their church. And this is like their experience about how that's uncool and God wouldn't be like that. And then actually,
so do you think Lisa or Kelly, the person who wrote this?
It could be either. It's probably, it could have been the guy. Let's say both of them were ostracized. He can still go on to write. I have no, I don't, for some reason, I don't think this film has a female perspective. I doubt it was the Lisa.
Yes.
This film is downright hateful towards women, I feel.
Yes. I mean, 100%. I think I realized it was probably a Christian film or, you know, affiliated loosely with some kind of religious belief was because the problem has a very clear solution, which is called abortion. I was like, they're talking about this problem, I was like, well, you can just have an abortion.
We're pretty sure that's why Lisa went there. It's like, oh, yeah, your uncle has something to take care of.
Got
this.
A coat hanger.
Like,
got
oink.
It. Let's go. Yeah. Yeah. But that's not what it was. Yeah, she was looking for a back alley abortion. She wakes up and now her boyfriend has stolen her fetus. Tough stuff.
You're welcome.
It's a hard day.
But in the end of the day, if that's what she wanted, isn't that what she got?
No.
Like, essentially.
Because her child is going to live in the world and what her choice, she's got to either abandon it or like just accept that her boyfriend has made this choice for her.
But at the point that
he's taken away her rights to her own body is what I'm saying. And it's not
cool,
man.
But at the point that the fetus leaves her body, is it her baby anymore? Isn't it then his baby?
No, that's not how it works.
This crowd treading very lightly.
I'm refusing to comment right now. I'm gonna let Paul dig up, stupid.
Oh my god, no, Paul, that's incorrect opinion.
Can you get the question is, can you get cancelled over this hypothetical can't ever happen situation?
Well, I guess we'll see, Paul, won't we? We will see.
Find out in real time.
Yeah.
So, Gary Busey also has a very interesting cameo in this film. What did you guys think of that?
Honestly, he was a highlight for me. I actually was really enjoying what Gary Busey was doing. He knew what sort of movie he was on. He was leaning into it, and he was just having a good time. I actually loved the lines
that they gave him. I think at one point he's talking to the team on the field, and he's just like, oh, you guys have to go to this area where you just walk down that way and then you take a left and go through the door. What the fuck is that line?
It was just so weird and specific. I definitely think he was like adding his own dialogue to this.
Yeah, I'm sure he was blackout drunk because you'd fucking have to be. And he was just like rocking up and be like, I'm just going to improv it, guys. Just going to improv it.
And as you mentioned before, like the editors didn't edit anything out of this film.
Mm-mm.
Like you have the feeling that every scene was completely played out, finished to end, and then they didn't do any edits.
That was because they only shot it from one angle. It was just toothers. It was just toothers. To see them cut to singles was really strange and quite exciting when it happened. Because most of the time it would just be a twofer all the way through.
When they go to a single, you're like, wow, this is cinema.
Yeah. They had nothing to cut to. Villeneuve just entered the room all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Oh, I do have one thing to say. The quote-unquote slutty girl was like the only good person in town.
Yes!
Because this film is simply about, let's be honest, if no one knows that he's pregnant, He's just a guy who's put on a bit of weight and everyone turns into a monster. And the, I hate to say it, but the slutty girl was kind to him, was still interested in him, generally seemed to really like him. I felt like she was the hero of the piece.
I forgot all about it. She was the best part. She was like, oh, this is the hero of the film. Absolutely. I completely forgot about that. Yeah, she was great.
But why did they put her in that wig?
Because she was cool.
But as soon as I saw her, I was like, I'm sorry, is this meant to be the popular girl? Because it just makes no sense.
Yeah, when it started, I was like, what year is this set in? Because the all the cool girls in school look like they came out of like an early 2000s movie.
Yeah, you cannot tell me this was not made in like 2001. Like, you simply cannot tell me that it exists in the modern era, because it doesn't.
And the musical moments in this film, like, just next level.
Just immediately went on Spotify, got the soundtrack, you know.
Was it on Spotify?
I don't know. I hope not.
I love that he got to both have the big song at the school dance and the big speech at the end of graduation. He got to double dip in the end of teen films.
Yeah.
What a guy, Kelly.
I mean, so deserved.
Yeah. And both amazing, epic performances, like emotional speech. But I think we can all agree that his emotional high point and the real, like, the moment that really got me in this film was when he was looking out that hospital window at the end
over the crowd
and he crosses his arms Wakanda forever.
You know that was set up right in the opening minutes,
really,
right? So when they're up in the bell tower at the start of the film, he's asking Lisa, the real hero of this story, is the victim at least. He's talking to him and asking about something. He talks about what it's like he dreams about playing baseball and the crowd cheering for him. And he does the same thing. It's not as grand, but he pulls his arms into a cross and then lets it go again. Or pulls it out and then pulls it into himself.
He's talking about, like, you know, he loves playing baseball and he wishes he could just reach, when people are cheering for him, reach out and grab that feeling and keep it forever. And so that scene in the hospital is direct callback, and he does that. Like, all these people love him, and he's just reaching out.
I find it funny that you guys are stoned. And
hey, I never said stoned.
I didn't say stoned.
I don't know what
you said stoned.
But yeah, no, it's definitely burnt in my brain.
I didn't see it as him, like, taking it and then giving it back.
He was just taking it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, his hands are like reached out, like, dance puppets, you're mine. I control this.
Now he's got a god complex after stealing a baby. Yeah, probably.
Did you see the other joke that was like that played out throughout the film as well, involving the window?
No.
So the stained glass window, the very first scene with the preacher, the stained glass window, they're talking about with all this pride that's imported from Italy or something like that. And then when Kelly goes to meet up with Lisa at the church, he's throwing rocks at the window and you hear one smash a window. And I was like, that's the window that they were talking about in the opening scene. And then later on, Stephen Tobolowsky is talking to someone who was fixing the window up on a ladder.
Never show it broken.
It broken because they couldn't afford to break it. But it had a beginning, middle, and end. And I was like,
impressed when they, like, that third time came around. Bro was like, oh my God, that had payoff.
Exactly.
Might be giving it too much credit. But yeah, one moment that you guys mentioned in your podcast, but I hadn't listened to it yet, so I had no idea it was coming, was the frog being dissected.
Yeah.
I lost it. I was wheezing with laughter. It was the funniest thing. Oh my God. It was, and it's a massive frog and clearly plastic because its legs are sticking up in the air. Yeah. I just went to the $2 shop and bought a bunch of frogs. Fuck, it made me laugh so much.
The fact that they didn't even try to take it out of the frame. Like, they could have just put the camera slightly up.
Yeah.
Why?
See, this makes me wonder, Paul, whether this is a bit of a Brendan situation where they actually did have two cameras and they just lost the footage of one of them. So they had a close-up, and because they lost the footage, they had to rely on just the wide
establishing
for every scene.
Shot. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Like, what was your, like, emotion? Like, how much support did you need after you saw the monkey fetus?
The monkey corpse.
I was emotionally drained from the moment early in the film when I realized that Lisa had not given consent for the baby to be gone. Nothing could shock me after that. This was
I was pretty upset. I remember saying to Brian, I'm like, oh, I don't want to see that. Like, I can put up with a bad movie. I don't want to see dead monkeys. Like, that's just not the tone I'm vibing with right now.
They spent they couldn't get a frog because they spent all their money on the dead monkey.
But I'm pretty sure the dead monkey was just the live
monkey.
The monkey acting.
Yeah.
I think they just sold it to fiercely.
I'm pretty sure they killed five monkeys for that.
It's just on Valium. It's fine.
I always talk about, from a screenplay point of view, we just actually had our movie club before recording this. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about watching the movie Galaxy Quest. Have you guys seen Galaxy Quest? Have you seen Galaxy Quest, Brandon? Yeah. Fantastic movie. We're talking about what a brilliant script it was. Within 5 minutes, we're introduced to the characters. We know who they are. And with it, in 10 minutes, we're into, like, Tim Allen's character is in space and, like, spoilers for the movie, but he meets real aliens. It's like, we get to what we need to be getting to so quickly. Efficiency in storytelling. It took 45 minutes to get to the point where Kelly had the fucking baby inside him. 45 minutes.
But you had to have that 10-minute opening credit sequence of the crazy scientist following a mouse that we never see again.
You're making a great point, Paul. Absolutely. Yeah. We did need to see that. Oh, can we talk about the dad?
Oh, yes, please.
I love a dad who just comes into your room and affirms your life and your choices. Like, it was giving me real, like, you know, Dawson Leary's dad. I was like, he just kind of just clearly this person who wrote the film fucking loves their dad a lot, and that's great.
And hates their mum.
Or just is like, she should be silent.
Women don't talk.
No. There's no need for it. But yeah, his little spiel about God, but no to religion. All that. I just loved every scene of that. I was like, I'm glad this is going for 15 minutes, this scene. This is great.
If you were Kelly's dad and you found out that your son had done that, what would your reaction be?
Well, I clearly forgot the lesson about consent. That would be my first thought as a parent. And then, I don't know, take him to hospital pretty quickly.
Instantly take him to a hospital. It's like, have you been getting prenatal care? Have you got an OB-GYN lined up? Like, how far along are
also,
you?
Also, how is the baby getting out?
Yeah.
Well, I'm so excited. Can I see the scan?
Yeah,
exactly. I need to call a lawyer or the police because my brother needs to go to prison for what he's done to my teenage son. Yeah, there's lots of things going on.
Can we do a gender reveal?
What can we blow up? Yeah.
But, like, it is mind-blowing that, you know, you think, okay, I'm the script writer. I'm writing a film about a man becoming pregnant, a cis man becoming pregnant, and at no point I'm going to put something in the script about how the baby's coming out. Nobody mentions how the baby's coming out. No one mentions anything on a medical level. No one mentions, like, any of that shit.
Paul,
like,
I'm not convinced the people that write this know how pregnancy works. Once he has the baby, we skip to the point where he's just got a baby bump or a baby belly, and like that, the rest of the film is just talking about how people think he looks weird. Like,
think he's fat, specifically. Yeah,
looks
fat.
Weird? Yeah. I think they said fat. Fucking fat piece of shit.
Sure.
Yeah.
But like, there are so many things. If you're going to, I know Lucy in the podcast is not interested in films that are making fun of pregnancy and all that sort of stuff. And I understand that too. But like, if you're going to do a film like this, at least make it about pregnancy. Like, talk about pregnancy, not just getting fat, which is what the whole thing was.
It's just about a guy who got fat. Yes. That's all this film is about. It's nothing to do with pregnancy whatsoever.
Yeah, because at no point he never really feels concerned about the health and well-being of the babies.
Nope.
And he, like, constantly is doing things like playing baseball where, like, balls are, like, flying at you and riding a bike and doing all these things that really...
Tripping into the dirt.
Yeah. Having, like, heated arguments in the rain and then, like, rolling around in the mud. Like,
you should... what was your perspective on the dramatic scene where Lisa confronts Kelly and asks for her baby back?
She's
that,
a
for
woman
me, was
who
the
is
comic.
No, she's extremely traumatized and she has every right to be upset. What the... What? I don't see the problem
I will
here.
Say, weird decision to come to when he's like 2 weeks away from giving birth. Like, I was like, okay, well, you can just wait 2 weeks. That's not going to be hard. Like, he said he's like eight and a half months pregnant.
Yeah,
like,
could be any second now. Just like,
just wait.
But for me, that was the comedic highlight of the film, just purely on a performance level, on the score, just... It encapsulated everything that was wrong about the film.
Like the line, possession is 9/10 of the law. And baby, I'm possessed.
No, I'm possessed, baby.
Baby.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, it's good stuff. Good stuff. I can see why they, I reckon they wrote that line and then framed the entire film around it.
And then wrote forwards and backwards from that scene.
Yeah. They're like, fuck, that's a good line. I need to use it somewhere. Let's write an insane film.
So after we recorded the episode, I started following Kelly on Instagram. Of course you did.
If you ever go to our Instagram and looked at our followers, all you would see is shirtless men.
It's true. I'm not going to deny it. It's true. My Discover feed is pretty much porn at this point. But yeah, it seems like he's kind of stepped away from acting as like a lifestyle influencer. And I don't think this film had nothing to do with that.
Yeah, no, and I'll be honest, I think he made the right choice. So good for him.
I would be surprised if several careers went ended from this film.
Can you end a career that never really started?
I feel like a lot of people on this film, it was just like a job. Like they were actually just, you know, the local school teacher or something is manning the camera. Like I don't think anyone's career was in jeopardy except
But that's
for
a bit that surprised me. In the end credits, we got to see behind the scenes footage and there was a relatively big crew. Like there were makeup. Yeah. Yeah. Like I was surprised by how many people were on that set. And no one said, but no one said, guys, I think this is really bad. Like,
I'm sure they said it, but they wanted that money. So
they were snickering to themselves. Yeah. Like, oh my God, I'm going to run away like a bandit.
Yeah, when they're at that catering tent, they're just like, what the fuck is this? Yeah.
Yeah. On the red carpet interviews, one of them, they're interviewing Kelly and they're like, oh, you know, what are we going to expect from this film? He's like, I think it's going to be really funny. I haven't seen it yet, but from this feeling on set, I think this is going to be a really funny movie. And I'm thinking, oh no. It's like watching a car crash in slow motion.
Brilliant.
But again, like, I just don't feel that people have discovered this. Like, I feel like people should have talked about, like, why isn't this on How Did This Get Made? Like, people should have, like, we are the first major review of this film. Like, no one else has reviewed it.
I don't know why your tone is acting like it's shocking. That's not shocking to anyone. Yeah.
This but is buried deep into the bowels of Amazon. Like, you couldn't find it without getting an excavation team. The reason no one has found this, it was picked up in some deal that Amazon did with some catalogue of films and it just popped
on
there.
Amazon's films are fucking atrocious, the selection.
It just makes me wonder what else is out there. Like, there could be all sorts of stuff just
hiding
there.
There's so many bad movies, but there's very few that are bad in this way, I feel. Like, bad on this many levels. So I still stand by. It's a special film. I want people to discover it still.
Right. Well, you have to tweet it, How Did This Get Made, then, because I'm sure they'd be interested.
You can tell Paul wants to do this because this is his second podcast episode about this thing.
Are you just going to make an offshoot podcast where you just get different people to come on and talk about
Motherboy?
I would so be down for
that. I know you would, Paul. It's not a joke. I'm concerned.
All right, so on our episodes, we always do a tenuous swap.
Mm-hmm.
So we did ours last time, so I want to hear yours. What do you think people should watch instead of Mama Boy that's related to Mama Boy in some way?
I get the feeling I'm late to this by the fact that we've already brought it up on the podcast, but my recommendation was going to be in terms of, like, The Room is the one everyone knows about. I don't know how well Birdemic is known because it hasn't had a feature film made about it or a book written about it like The Room has. Birdemic, Shock and Terror is one of my all-time favorite bad films.
Good.
Fucking love it. You want to talk about a long introduction? Watch an intro that's just a guy driving a fucking car for 10 minutes to start the movie. In real time. That's how that movie starts. The scene of him of them all getting their bonuses when they sell the company, and all the applause around the table in the conference room alone is worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
And that's before the birds start attacking. Like, it's fantastic. Birdemic is, and I think you can find it all on YouTube, I'm pretty sure.
I've got a confession. I've never actually watched it.
Paul, oh, you're God, kidding. Paul. That's why I'm recommending it. That is our next one of these nights. We're going to watch Birdemic together.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
I love Birdemic.
It's so good.
One of the best nights I ever had with Damask. We were sitting around getting drunk and other things, watching shit films. And Birdemic was one of them. It was, oh, it was a blast.
Just blew our mind. Oh. Yeah, yeah. That's really good. That's a really fun watch. Yeah, good recommendation, Brad.
Brendan, what was the last bad movie we watched together? I'm pretty sure it was something that
Mama Boy.
Brought in Damask.
What did you do for the podcast last week?
I feel like 33 AD was...
No.
That's a film, listening to you guys talk about it, just the title alone, I figured it must... Like, 33 AD. So this is an assassin in the time of Jesus, is what
No, it's in the now, and they time travel back to assassinate Jesus.
Yeah,
that's... And the disciples. Yeah.
That's amazing.
No,
it's
no,
the
no.
The ultimate jihad.
The last...
Nice.
So yeah, I highly recommend that one. But we did watch one that you guys had mentioned at Halloween. Brendan and I watched Sleepaway Camp.
I
know you guys had mentioned that you had watched it as a bad movie together.
Yep.
And that was
actually
another
the same
one.
Night we watched Birdemic, I'm pretty sure. I think that was the same night.
We lost our minds.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
And that was an epic. That was epic. I really enjoyed that one.
There's actually genuinely good parts of that movie.
Like, there's genuinely fun and there's genuine, like, it's insane. It's bonkers.
Yeah.
But
it's like 90% a fun, time. Like, hangout teen film and then the 10% of, like, a fucked up slasher film.
It really reframes Wet Hot American Summer. Like, once you watch Sleepaway Camp and you go back and watch, you're like, this is even funnier now.
I think without the ending, it wouldn't have the reputation it does. I think it all comes down to how it ends, which is...
insane.
Like, it needed more of the mother.
Controversial, say the least.
Say the least.
It would actually make a good double feature with Mama Boy, I feel.
Do you want to leave a really confusing feeling?
Yeah, exploration of gender and gender roles. Like,
what an exploration. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Consent of cutting off heads.
All right, so Damask, what's your tenuous recommendation?
All right, I've got two. All right, so if you want to watch a Christian film that is about a baby that goes somewhere it shouldn't, Prince of Egypt is a great film. I fucking love that movie.
I thought you were going to say Baby's Day Out. I was like, I didn't realize it was a Christian film.
although Prince of Egypt could also be a Jewish film. So that's one of them. My other one was the lead guy was in a show called Astrid Clover with Alison Snyder, who is one of my favorite characters in AP Bio. And I love AP Bio. It's got Patton Oswalt in it. I always forget his name. I think it's Glenn Howerton. Yeah, Glenn Howerton from Always Sunny. It's just a really funny, solid show. So watch that.
Cool. I've been meaning to rewatch Prince of Egypt. I really loved it when it came out.
I truly, firmly believe it would make the perfect stage musical. Like, the songs are fucking sick. I remember I made Brod watch it quite a few years ago now because I loved it as a kid growing up. I was a little Christian loser. I loved it. But I still love it now just because the songs are so good.
When You Believe, that's from that, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah. Yep. I made Brod watch it and then he turned to me, he's like, wait, so God is the bad guy? And I was like, I couldn't defend it because, like, he is. He's, like, killing firstborn babies and, like, smiting all these, you know, seemingly innocent people other than those in charge. God is the bad guy, but it's still a good movie. It's still a good movie.
That's fair.
I'm not going to disagree.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I'm going to say God is good. And thank you to all our Christian listeners. Love and respect you and your religion.
Do you really think we have Christian listeners?
I think we got a few. Why not?
Actually, we probably do.
Can I end with a weird detail that was annoying me about the film?
Yeah.
How did they not know it was twins beforehand? Like,
because he didn't have one doctor's visit.
No. But when the guy swapped the fetus into her body, if she was anything past 2 weeks, which she must have been, you would think to know she was pregnant, there would already be two fetuses.
No, because there was a, like, he was using some like ray gun bullshit. It wasn't like
was
he,
there
like,
a machine?
Cut him open and
I got
it
the
out.
Feeling it was surgery. The way he was waking up afterwards and they were doing like the looking into his eyes and going, "Are you okay?" It seemed like it was fucking surgery to me. I didn't get the feeling it was a magical machine.
Interpretation.
Yeah, maybe the one thing they did cut out of this film was the extended surgery, the surgery sequence with full close-ups of the incisions.
So they cut her open with a rusty saw. Yeah, all that stuff cut out. I don't know why.
That's why it took her so long to be like, "Could I have my baby back?" She was like building up strength.
She's in hospital she with tetanus.
Seriously, that's my like headcanon. Like, she's traumatized. She was staying. She kept running away because every time she was anywhere near the guy, she had flashbacks to that fucking night. Like.
So usually at the end of our episodes we rank this against all the other SWAT films we've watched, which obviously you haven't watched all of them, so
how could they? I couldn't live
of the ones you've watched with us. Soul and this one. What order would you put them in?
Yes. So out of Futurama, Lizzie McGuire, Community,
Buffy,
Soul and this, what would you rank it?
I'm going to add Heart and Soul to my list and I'm going to put this at the bottom.
Yeah, it's definitely at the bottom in terms of quality. Yeah. In terms of enjoyment, right up the top there. No, like awesome. In terms of enjoyment, I did really enjoy myself. So
I had a very good time. Mm. There's always a question of how much that's the film and how much
don't
the company
watch it
you're
alone.
In
don't
and
watch
how
it
much
alone.
That's yeah. what
I don't,
you put into
I don't
your body.
Think, honestly, as much as I love this, watching this film with Brendan and Lucy, I think if I was watching it by myself, I might have not lasted more than 10 minutes.
Based on the podcast, you are mostly just enjoying watching them squirm.
Yes. Well, absolutely. Absolutely. It's funny when you're in the room with them watching one of these films, there's like an energy radiating off them and it just like gives me life.
This is why I think you deliberately suggest things like Upload, because you actually want people to hate you. Like, you feed off people like
Upload. I love Upload. I genuinely think is good and I will defend it to this day. If you end up taking my suggestion and we do it Emily in Paris season 2, that's a different story. I love it, but I expect you to hate it. But Upload, I actually genuinely thought you were going to like it.
Which makes me concerned because I like the idea that you're doing this to people because it's out of your own enjoyment. But then when you talk about Upload, I'm worried that you're unwell. Like, I don't know.
Let the record show, Brendan likes Upload as well. So I just gotta put that
catching.
Out there.
Not as much as Paul.
Ah, and now he fucking backtracked. Yeah, whatever.
If we were in high school, I just like clinging onto the social group. That's
Upload where the cool sucks, kids and you suck.
That's how you survive.
All right. Well, thank you so much for doing this for us. I know Brendan's definitely appreciative of it.
Yeah.
Poor Brendan.
But yeah, no. As soon as I heard that you guys actually made the effort and watched it, I really wanted to make this happen, some way. So. Thanks so much. Everyone who's listening to this, if you haven't listened to Hunting Seasons, you need to go listen to Hunting Seasons. Like, it's genuinely, even if I wasn't on there all the time, it would be one of my favorite podcasts. Every time I watch a show and you guys have watched it as well, I'm really excited to listen to the episode. So,
and stay tuned for their bonus episode where I go and give them shit about their dog shit takes about Roy and Lily from Ted Lasso season 2. Because I have some things to say about that.
Wait. No, we're going to do this right here, right now. Yeah. What are you saying about Roy Kent?
I'm saying you were so happy about their relationship. Mm-hmm. There's an episode that I want to discuss that they should have split up. They should have broken up. And she should have ended up with Nate. Like,
okay, this is a bonus episode. Whoa. So this is a bonus episode. So screw all the rules. We're now doing spoilers for Ted Lasso season 2.
Yeah,
I
need
to talk about
this.
Come
Let's
on.
Go. Come on.
I just felt like it needed to be addressed. There is an episode of Ted Lasso season 2. So spoilers once again. Roy is being a little clingy. And what is it, Keely?
Keely, yes.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So Keely is annoyed by it. She's finding it irritating. She talks mm-hmm. to three people who are in Roy's life and discusses the intimate details of her relationship with them. And then he gets upset about it. Now, that is very justified to me. However, the way the story frames it, he's done something wrong by getting upset about it, and then he has to apologize by Drogo Buff and going down on her. How is that fair?
No, hold on. I think you've misinterpreted the storyline to some degree.
Yeah, mate, the story's not wrong. You are. So get ready for this.
So he gets upset about, because he doesn't like being talked about, because he doesn't want to be perceived as a bad guy. But then he realizes that, you know, she's allowed to have some space and maybe was being a bit clingy. That's fine. And then he, like, creates space for her and tells her, it is okay for you to have some space. Here it is. And we're great. What's wrong with that? I don't see the problem.
No, he was upset because he was like, you're discussing, like, you went to everyone else before me this problem. And that's what he was upset about. And for some reason, that never gets addressed. She never has to, like, apologize about that. He has to come to her and apologize for him unknowingly being too clingy.
What's so wrong about... So, because these people are not only in his life, they are her closest friends.
Yeah.
And her support. Why is it wrong for her to kind of express this situation that she doesn't know how to handle with the people in her life? Because that's part of the problem is, like, he's so clingy, and that is a really kind of, that's a hard thing to bring up to someone without being like, or sounding as though you're like, get the fuck off me. So she wants to kind of.
But I would
just say, talking to her diamond dogs. So the next time that he has a problem, he goes to the diamond dogs, Keely should be upset.
He never goes to the diamond dogs.
He does at the end of the season. Thank you very much.
He realizes the benefit of, like, even if you're happy and in a relationship, you still need more than one person, and that's okay.
Her going to her girlfriends and talking about it, I'm okay with. Going to, like, everyone who, like, he works with and talking to him about it.
But they all happen to be the same people.
They all
that's
come
just
in
the problem.
Because she's talking to her boss lady, and then they all come in the room, and it just happens that way.
They all just happen to be the people in his life and her life just also happen to be people they work with as well. Like, that's just the circumstances.
I'm going to be devil's advocate. I'm going to go in the middle here. I think they both should have had a moment of apologizing to each other.
Okay.
Exactly.
What I want to understand is how this gets to Keely should have ended up with Nate, which is what you said a second ago. How do we get there?
That's insane.
That is insanity.
I may have been a bit hyperbolic.
Okay. I'm going to step down off my soapbox now because that was the bit that was really getting me. I was like, okay, sure. The writing was slightly weak in that one scene. I'm sorry that they forgot to have Keely apologize too.
I still don't think she had to, but, you know, we'll just agree to disagree on that one.
No, he can do better. All right,
and that concludes our spoiler section for Ted Lasso season 2.
Roy Kent can have whoever he wants. That's the thing. But he's chosen Keely, all right?
Yeah, Keely's the one.
Yeah, I will be devastated if they break up.
Yeah,
and I
agreed.
I feel like the vibe of the season is going towards that, which upsets me.
I'm hoping they'll come apart just to come back together. That's what I'm hoping. If they're going to do that, I hope they learn lessons, they grow as people so that they have a stronger bond ultimately.
I agree. Yeah.
I hate in TV shows when people like drift apart for no particular reason. That shit pisses me off. Like, we have to deal with that crap in real life. TV has to be either
reflect it.
It should be like, you know, a dramatic fucking, I cheated on you, you killed my parents or some bullshit. Other than that, you stay together.
Yeah. I think like Parks and Rec proved to everyone that you can do that with Ben and Leslie. It's like just when you're, you know, you've got that sexual tension of, are they going to get together? The impulse of so many creators is like, oh, well, now that tension's gone, we've got to cause chaos in the relationship. In Parks and Rec, they don't do that, and the show is better for it.
All that being said, thanks for listening to the show, Brennan.
That's true.
I love it.
All right. So next episode of the Swapcast podcast, we will be reviewing A Whisker Away, the Netflix anime movie. So that should be a fun one. I don't think it will be as controversial as Mama Boy. And what were you guys reviewing next on the hunting season?
Why the Last Man.
Why the Last Man.
One and only season, more than likely.
And are you going to be doing that live on Twitch as well? Or?
That's the plan, yeah.
Yeah.
We haven't announced the exact time or anything yet, but it's probably going to be a Sunday night in Australian time. But we're on a different coast, which makes it really hard to organise and get that clear, but yeah.
Yeah, we will, like, just to be clear, we will never do a live Twitch version of the Swapcast podcast. I fuck up so much.
That's the bit you bait people with. Like, you get to see us at our worst before we edit out. See it raw and uncut.
It's like literally an hour and a half of me going, fuck, shit, fuck, cunt. All right. Well, anyway, so thanks for listening. And if you don't review us on iTunes, you are a piece of shit on the ground. DPW, you don't deserve to be a listener. You just need to go away.
I was wondering where that was going. You don't deserve to fucking live. Just kill yourself. Whoa, Paul.
I don't want to be responsible for that. So, I was Paul Mitzi.
I was Brendan Levi. I heart Killian Nate.
I was Broderick Gordis, and I'm against people removing faces without consent.
I'm Damask Leary, and I'm all for Mama Boy. I think most teenage boys should carry their girlfriend's pregnancies. I think we all learnt a lot. Amen.
Amen.
See you, bye.
Bye.
The Swapcast podcast is recorded in Adelaide, Australia. It's hosted by Paul Mitzi and edited by Brendan Levi and Paul Mitzi. Our theme song was written and performed by John Marco of Two Creative, featuring Lucy Thomas, and recorded at Browntown Studios. Our music bumpers were created by Reggie Parker. Contact him on parkerregmusic@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.